I just love my new gingerbread man soap. Smells just like the real thing. Except it lathers up with awesome soapy suds. Hey! What the?
Can't catch me!
Hey, your soap. You're not supposed to talk.
Can't catch me! Just try!
What the? Hey, where are you going?
Can't catch me!
Hey, come on! You're my delicious soap! I need you! I need your gingerbready bubbles!
So does the world, lady. It's that time of year, and I'm off to bring scrumptious suds to all the good boys and girls the world over.
But you're my soap! Hey, get over here! I'm gonna get you! Would you get over here?
Can't catch me!
Can't catch me. Gingerbread man soap and other handmade brilliant bath and body. Only from Bubble Genius.
Bubbles guaranteed. Talking not included. Actual soap will not run away.
BubbleGenius.com!
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Are you Gus's son?
I'm Owen.
You the shower curtain fella? Yeah, Del Griffin. How are you? This is Neil Page from Chicago.
Hi.
Pleased to meet you both.
I'm to drive you to Wichita to catch a train?
Yeah, we'd appreciate it.
Train don't run out of Wichita.
Hmm?
Unless you're a hog or a cattle. People, train runs out of stub, Bill.
That'll be fine. That'll be just fine. Leave it be. Get your lazy behind out here and put that trunk up in the back.
Oh, no, no, the word, we've got it.
It's very heavy.
She don't mind. She's short and skinny, but she's strong. Her first baby come out sideways. She didn't scream or nothing.
Isn't that something? You're a real trooper. We've got it already. It's done.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Radio goes with life. A salt and pepper, a fork and knife. Radio goes with life.
Here we go!
Top of the morning, officer.
Hi.
Is there something I can help you with?
What the hell are you driving here?
We had a small fire last night, but we caught it in the nick of time.
You have any idea how fast you were going?
Funnily enough, I was just talking to my friend about that. Our speedometer's melted, and as a result, it's very hard to say with any degree of accuracy exactly how fast we were going.
78 miles an hour.
78, huh? Well, yeah, I could buy that, sure, I guess. You would know better than us, especially since we got a melted speedometer.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality. The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
It is Thursday, November 15th, 2012, and this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. I'm Bob, that's Chez. Brought to you, as always, by BubbleGenius.com. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius. With their gingerbread man soap. But yeah, it is Thanksgiving season. In fact, this is the last show before the Thanksgiving break. We're not going to be doing any shows next week, obviously, because...
Where did the time go?
I have no idea.
Jesus.
I mean, seconds ago, we were talking about Halloween and the upcoming election and the debates, and now it's like, it's holidays. It's the holidays. So, yeah, I mean, I think for the first time in a couple of years, I'll be buying a Christmas tree. And see, you know, it's happening. It's going to be one of those shows. Did you hear that?
Get the technical difficulty slate ready.
And see, that had nothing to do with me. I didn't really do that. That was a computer glitch. That's about as technical as I get on the show.
That's Guy Fieri's donkey sauce dropping all over your equipment.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about Guy Fieri and that great New York Times review of his awful, awful restaurant. We're going to be talking about that in the after party. So if you haven't subscribed to the after party, you want to do so. If you want to get... Actually, in fact, Chez, you're going to be doing your dramatic reading of the entire New York Times item. review.
I don't know how dramatic it's going to be, but yeah, I mean, I'm certainly willing to read it. We'll talk about it later, but the thing that shocks me the most about all that is that the New York Times review, is as brilliant as it is and as scathing as it is actually not the worst thing being said about that restaurant. It's getting the crap kicked out of it from all kinds of different interesting places.
And rightfully so. I mean, Guy Fieri is probably the biggest poser on that entire network, on the entire food network.
He's a joke.
I mean, he's not even really a trained chef, is he? I mean, he's not a cook. I mean, he doesn't do it. He doesn't do food.
Right? No, I mean, look, I don't doubt that he's probably a nice guy. But, yeah, I mean, he's a tool. He's a douche. He's a huge douche.
Yeah,
And yeah, it's when you create a persona like that, you can't expect people to not respond to it. He's got the kind of persona you either really like, if you're freaking brain damaged, or you really, really virulently hate.
Yeah.
And I'm on the other side. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you know, if he walked into a party I was at, I would, you know, I'd leave immediately. He's that guy. He's that douche. He's that douchey guy, you know, the douchey frat boy who never grew up.
Yeah. I think that's what most people really, really hate about him, because I'm really, really trying too hard to be cool and awesome.
Yeah.
You know, with the sunglasses on the back of his head and the rings and the earrings and the two-toned goatee and the stupid hand gestures.
Exactly. And all of his, you know, and all of his little catchphrases, and his food is all, you know, it's the food at the restaurant has all kinds of clever, stupid names. And it's just shut up. No, please go away. Die in a grease fire or something.
Well, we're going to be talking about that in depth. This, and in particular, yes, that New York Times review, because that was so damn funny. And we'll be getting into that on the after party. Politics this week, obviously all over the place. I mean, there are a couple of Romney things that I wanted to start out with. And yeah,
isn't it surprising though that we're talking about him this week? I was thinking that, like, I, you know, I wrote a piece for Banter today, and you know, I don't mean to derail you right off the bat. By the way, I apologize.
Oh no,
but
no.
But yeah, you know, I mean, it shocks. I shouldn't be talking about him. The election's over. You know, neither of us. He should have done the smart thing, which is just kind of vanish.
Yeah.
You know, the dignified thing. And it's amazing that he still managed to say something absolutely reprehensible and stupid.
It really is. I mean, what he did, if you haven't caught up with this, it's all over the place. Romney basically believed every bit of what he said about the 47%. He wasn't just pandering to his donors. And we know this now because he did a conference call with supporters in which he basically said the same thing. He essentially said that the reason so many people voted for the president and the reason Mitt Romney lost is because the president offered them gifts.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, he you know, it's kind of fun. It's fun to watch. He did a 360. He did a 180 from the 47% comment, yeah, then a 180 right back.
Right. He completely disavowed the 47% stuff. And then, now that the election's over, I really did mean to say that. I have the tape here. This was just released moments before the show. This is Mitt Romney from the conference call talking about how essentially the president has just you know, bribed Latinos, women, young people with gifts, you know, like human dignity and health care and college loans, as if a college loan is somehow a gift, for God's sake.
I mean, and that really is it. Those are gifts. Those are not necessities. Those are not things that people in the the most technologically advanced, the mightiest superpower that's ever existed on this planet, the most civilized, in most respects, country that's ever existed. Those are not things for them to expect to at least have, you know, access to without dying.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, these are handouts. These are gifts.
Right.
These
They're
are
handouts.
Bribes.
That's just freaking ridiculous. Yeah.
Here's Mitt Romney from the conference call.
What the president's campaign did was focus on certain members of his base coalition, give them extraordinary financial gifts from the government, and then work very aggressively to turn them out to vote, and that strategy worked.
I mean, it's a proven political strategy, which is give a bunch of money from the government to a group, and guess what? They'll vote for you. Let me tell you what I would do if I were a Democrat running 4 years from now. I'd say, you know what? Dental care ought to be included in Obamacare.
Immigration we can solve, but the giving away free stuff is...
Was that Mitt Romney eating a bag of Doritos? What was that?
That was a really, really, really rich guy on the other end of the line, like crushing the head of an immigrant just for the hell of it, like crushing the head of his gardener.
So this is jittery Mitt Romney saying that the next Democrat to run for president ought to promise dental care, too. Well, the Republican outreach to...
Yeah.
To Latinos and women.
Give me a second to stop laughing. Hold on. The Republican outreach. That lasted a week.
Right. I mean, I know. I mean, I linked to that David Frum. I mean, Frum has been actually quite brilliant in two different analyses of the results of the election. One, he was on Morning Joe and described it with this great term, the problem with the Republican Party, and that is the conservative entertainment complex. I love that phrase.
It's a great term. I mean, you know, we're talking about something that I wrote about for Banter just today. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, because it was my topic, and the whole thing was, you know, it's nice to have things return to normal on the right. You know, the introspection for about a week was fun. But now everything gets back to normal. And if you thought, you know, like me, I had my moment of, you know, of actually thinking that they might learn something. And that moment has passed because now I know it's just going to be four more years of complete insanity. And I know I think Frum understands that.
It really is. It's going to be insanity and it's going to be quite a bit of tokenism. Mm-hmm. They're not going to change their ideas, but maybe they'll elevate a few more women. A few more Latinos. I know Marco Rubio was in Iowa.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to talk about trying too hard? We're talking about Guy Fieri trying too hard. If Marco Rubio's already staking out Iowa and, you know, the ink on the votes is still not dry from the 2012 election, that ought to tell you something. I would assume he's been put up to that. I mean, I think the Republican Party sent him up there, said, you know what, go on up to Iowa, send a signal that we're with the Latinos.
Right. And that is exactly what it is. It's a cynical, pandering move mm-hmm. that people like Rush Limbaugh will wonder why America is not giving them credit for. I love when he uses that term. How come we don't get credit for Alan West? How come we don't get credit for Marco Rubio? Like, you know, like these are things that, you know, there's a certain amount of it's a zero sum game.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. And to mention Alan West and Marco Rubio, look, it's like saying, yeah, and I love that great Stephen Colbert photo from the Colbert Report with him, with his arm wrapped around his quote-unquote black friend, and he's got this big gleeful look on his face, and he's pointing like, look at my black friend. That's exactly what it is. It's not about the color of the skin or the reproductive organs of the candidate. It's about the ideas, and Republicans have time and time again lost. They've completely abandoned ideas. They don't have ideas anymore. What they have are, you know, I was so gratified to see that Bobby Jindal actually called it what it was. Bobby Jindal said the words bumper sticker slogans.
You know what? Here's the thing, though. I did appreciate what Jindal said. I really did. But here's the problem with what Jindal said. He didn't offer an actual plan, nor did he, like you just said, offer to change anything. He basically just said that they need to rebrand, which once again shows a complete lack of understanding of what the real problem is. Mm. Jindal just made the comment that, you know what, our brand isn't selling.
Yeah.
Well, he also is a kind of twisted, sort of grotesquely, you know, capitalistic way of looking at things.
But in his defense, he did say that we don't want to be the party of the rich anymore.
And that's very smart of him.
Yeah. And I don't know. Again, I don't know how far they can distance themselves from everything they've built up over the last 40 years. And it has been an ongoing conservative movement from 1964 on through the Reagan Revolution and through the Bush administration. They have been building this, and it is all constructed around what Frum called the conservative entertainment complex. And I don't think you can remove the conservative entertainment complex out of the equation without losing a sizable number of votes. So whatever you're picking up, you're losing 3, 4, 5-fold in disillusioned white people in the South.
And that's so it, exactly.
They've just absolutely painted themselves into a corner. And there were a couple of stories. I mean, going back
I think it was Taibbi who said it, and it was a great point because it's one that I've actually thought too, which is that the problem is they have conflicting ideologies, meaning that, I mean, their ideology itself isn't conflicting, but in order to pander to certain groups, they're going to have to cut off other groups. Mm-hmm. It's going to, you know, it's going to cross into each other and basically negate each other. In order to make certain people happy, they're going to, you know, in order to get a Latino vote or get a woman vote or get a gay vote, they're going to cut out the whites. In order to get the white vote, they're going to cut out a certain group of people. Depending on who they pander to, they are going to piss off, really piss off, not just, hey, you know what? We're all kind of in this together and we'll let that slide, but really just infuriate another faction that they need.
Well, and speaking of that, and going back to Republican outreach, I mean, these are a couple of stories that came across my desk in the last couple of days. I mean, here's the Ohio Republican Party voted to defund Planned Parenthood. That was today. It happened yesterday. And yet, yesterday being Wednesday, if you're hearing this at some other time other than the premiere date, it was Wednesday. The Republican Party in Ohio, for God's sake, Ohio, voted. It was a committee voted 11-9 among party lines to defund Planned Parenthood. I mean, it's insane. Then you got Mitt Romney and this 47% redux. And you've got in Arizona, yeah, crazy Arizona. They've decided to try to prevent the provisional ballots from being counted in Cochise County, which is a predominantly Latino county. This is in the congressional race down there, which is still, as of right now, unresolved. So, I mean, here you got disenfranchised Latino people in Arizona, which is going to be the next big swing state. I mean, you look ahead to 2016, Arizona is clearly going to be a swing state in 2016. And you've got Ohio, which is always a swing state, at least for the last several elections, becoming bluer and bluer now that Democrats have won it twice, at least in the race for the White House. And they're defunding Planned Parenthood. Good. Keep going, Republicans. You're doing great. You know, they just don't want to learn. And I, you know what? Quite frankly, I don't mind if they don't listen to Frum and Jindal. That's fine. Fine with me.
Yeah. I mean, seeing that already Fox is basically rebuilding the bubble. You know, they're blowing that sucker back up again.
Oh, yeah.
And you can tell that they haven't learned anything. And none of these people have learned a damn thing. I mean, one or two. You know, and I'm hoping that somehow they can – the voices of reason can somehow drown out the true insanity on that side. Yeah. But I'm not holding my breath and – yeah, there's a part of me now that's just kind of like, look, you know what? If you genuinely didn't learn from the beating you took last week, if you didn't truly grasp what happened, then screw it. You deserve to go down in flames.
Yeah, it's going to be really fascinating to see which direction they go because they're really at a crossroads. And there are going to be some people who are going to have to be dragged kicking and screaming down in a new path. And I just don't think they can get away with it. I just don't think they can do it. We're going to continue along this line of conversation right after a quick break. Back after this.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
And we are back. Yeah, as we were saying before the break, it's going to take a long time for the Republicans to transform themselves. I mean, it's taken a long time for the Democrats to transform themselves. I mean, remember, going back to 1984, 1988, I mean, you would talk about dismal, dismal times to be a Democrat. By the way, hey, Paul! and it was just, I mean, they went, I mean, the Democrats went through dark, dark, dark times, and it took them a long time to come to this period of time now with Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and sort of a new way of talking about liberalism, talking about government, the role of government, and a new way of branding the Democratic Party. And it's partly the shifting demographics in America. I almost said the shifting Democrats. And it's also a change in approach. And this is one of the things, you go back to 2008. One of the things that I really latched onto with the Obama campaign, that first campaign, was it seemed like they were doing things in a very different way. They weren't going to, you know, be capitulators and wafflers and trying desperately to find a, you know, third way that's awful, awful DLC style Democratic politics that worked really well for Bill Clinton for several years and then just had to be put out of its misery. The Evan Bayh type Democratic Party.
Right.
And so with Barack Obama, it ushered in a new era that continues to evolve. And that's really encouraging. And likewise, it's going to take a long time for the Republican Party to recover from all of this and evolve themselves. I think it was Jonathan Chait today who wrote that it could take them 25 years. I mean, I'd like to think it would take them 25 years. But, I don't want to really put forth any kind of prognostications about how the Republican Party is going to be, or any sort of things about a Democratic permanent majority, which is always, I mean, you want to talk about tempting fate. People start talking about that. I don't think that's going to happen necessarily.
I don't think so either.
I mean, there's always a chance and there's a strong chance that, the Republicans will win the White House in 4 years, depending on who runs. I mean, there's any number of different factors at play here. I mean, God only knows.
Joe Scarborough tells me that there's a 50-50 chance.
That's right. And if you don't think this is anything other than neck and neck, you're nothing but an ideologue.
Yep.
Hey, so there you go. The outreach continues in the Republican Party. Oh, there was one other thing about Mitt Romney. This is hilarious. This came out right after the election. The Romney people tried to foist a Benghazi Gate style deep throat character onto Bob Woodward. And you want to talk about desperation to turn Benghazi into a political scandal.
A thing.
Yeah.
They're trying so hard. Lindsey Graham and watching McCain and Graham McCain just go off the deep end with his bitterness, which is all the result of his absolute hatred of the fact that he got whooped.
Yeah. And then
years ago.
Right. And then the guy who he whooped 4 years ago got whooped. So there's a lot of bitterness going on there. And there's a desperate attempt to play out a script. The second term presidency cannot be allowed to continue unobstructed. There has to be some sort of scandal, whether it was Iran-Contra, whether it was Monica Lewinsky, whether it was Valerie Plame, that every second term president has to have a scandal. And so the Republicans will not let this president slide through his second term without some sort of Watergate. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, Watergate was the Nixon's second term scandal.
Right.
Every two-term president since Nixon has had a second term scandal. And so they're ginning this up for all it's worth. I mean, and if you go back prior to Election Day, the Mitt Romney staff discovered some guy who was operating under deep cover, and had special information about the Benghazi attack. So here they had, they're really trying to sculpt a Watergate-style scenario. I mean, it's absolutely absurd. So they get this guy, they contact Bob Woodward, and this guy, they show up. Oh, actually, what they did is they actually showed up and knocked on Bob Woodward's door. So we got this guy, he's like a deep throat guy. He's going to give you secret information about Benghazi, the Benghazi gate.
I could just see two guys in suits there with a homeless guy. Look who we got. Hey, Bob, you want to come out here? We got this guy.
They look like Mormons knocking on your door. They've got the short sleeve white shirt with the black tie, the little books under their arms.
I would imagine that's not that far from the truth, given that it's Romney.
Right. Or they do it really cloak and dagger style, like they're dressed up in ninja outfits. Right, and they show up at the door. And so it turns out Woodward says that he didn't show up at several meetings. So finally they convince Woodward, we've got this deep throat guy, meet with him. And Woodward says, well, okay, I'll meet with him. And then they go to meet up and the guy doesn't show up. The deep throat doesn't show up. I mean, Bob Woodward. I mean, you want to talk about desperate reaching to make it seem like Watergate? Bob Woodward? For God's sake. And then here's what Woodward said. When he finally showed up and he didn't have anything, where he had any firsthand knowledge. He didn't have anything. He said you ought to talk to his person and that person and so forth. So he basically said, go talk to certain people, and that was it. There was no information that he was passing along. So it didn't. So of course Woodward's not going to write about it, and he waited till, you know, I think professionally. So he waited to after the election to reveal how
he's like Clooney at the end of Ocean's 11 when Terry Benedict asks him if he knows anything, and he says, "I know a guy in jail, and anything happens, he'll, you know, he knows about it." And Benedict just says, "You know a guy." Okay.
So, you know, it's sad. It's really sad to see that. And sad, I say it's sad to watch in a very gleeful way with a big smile plastered across my face.
Yeah, I mean, watching the incompetence and the chaos and just everything that they've allowed themselves to become.
Yeah, but clearly the Benghazi gate, you know, made-up scandal was not just an election, pre-election kind of thing where they're trying to capitalize it to flummox the Obama campaign. They're trying to make it a big deal.
Yeah, and no, they want it to be a thing.
And I loved it when the president basically said, bring it on. You want to fight about this? You come after me. Go on after the UN ambassador, for God's sake. You know, I mean, all that information is out there. Do they think everyone are a bunch as naive and stupid as the radicals, their radical followers on Facebook, for God's sake?
They probably do.
They probably do, yeah.
I mean, again, the bubble, you know, it's just true. It's I think that they live in this world where I think that they're smart enough to understand that it doesn't have that much of a, you know, there are people who live outside the bubble. But I think that the noise inside the bubble is so loud, and they do spend so much time listening to, you know, Fox News and, you know, all that crap, the one side, that, yeah, they kind of believe that it's a bigger thing than it is. Mm-hmm.
Well, what happened was Susan Rice was going to appear on the Sunday shows, and she received, information from the CIA about what they thought at that time. You know, what could be made public about what happened in Benghazi. And, of course, I preface all of this by saying none of this was ever talked about after 9/11 or the dozen embassy bombings that took place during the Bush administration. American embassy bombings where people died in the dozens.
Mm-hmm.
None of that was ever talked about, by the way. So Susan Rice gets all
suddenly,
this information.
Suddenly we're awful for the fact that, you know, the cost of doing business. Suddenly administration needs to be held accountable for the fact that we actually operate in very, very hostile places.
And, of course, if you say, well, what about the dozen attacks on U.S. embassies and consulates during the Bush years? They'll say, well, why are you blaming Bush? You got Bush derangement syndrome or something. Ugh. No, we're setting forth some kind of evidence that you're hypocrites, that you have a short attention span and an even shorter memory. That's what we're saying. But so Susan Rice goes ahead and talks about what she heard from the CIA, legitimate information that, by the way, turned out to be true. It's very likely that the people who fired the rockets at the consulate in Benghazi it was a spontaneous attack. They were taking advantage of the fact that there were these protests. They blended in with the crowd, and we all know what happened after that. Yeah. It was nothing out of the ordinary. It's not a lie. I mean, I don't know. John McCain is just – I think he's got some sort of psychological disorder where one moment he seems like he knows what he's talking about, and the next minute he just goes off the deep end. So,
He's old and crazy.
He's old and crazy. That's the mental disorder I was trying to think of. Hey, we got to take another break for Bubble Genius back after this. Hey, my buttons are working.
Excellent.
It's usually the Bubble Genius music that gets all stymied on the show. Which I then summarily cut out of the show before I upload it. Hey, we're brought to you by Bubble Genius each and every week. BubbleGenius.com. Go there, buy their soap, buy their bath and body products. You're supporting a liberal business, a business run by women, completely vegan products. They have all of their materials are recyclable. They source close to home. I mean, all the great stuff that liberals should be lining up around the block for. If you're listening to this show and you're still going to Bed Bath & Beyond to buy your crap, you're an idiot. That ought to be... by the way, Bubble Genius, don't use that as your slogan because you'll just turn off all of your customers. Buy our crap or you're an idiot. Here's the latest word from Bubble Genius.
I just love my new gingerbread man soap. Smells just like the real thing. Except it lathers up with awesome soapy suds. Hey! What the?
Can't catch me!
Hey, your soap. You're not supposed to talk.
Can't catch me! Just try!
What the? Hey, where are you going?
Can't catch me!
Hey, come on! You're my delicious soap! I need you! I need your gingerbready bubbles!
So does the world, lady. It's that time of year, and I'm off to bring scrumptious suds to all the good boys and girls the world over.
But you're my soap. Hey, get over here. I'm going to get you. Would you get over here?
Can't catch me.
Can't catch me. Gingerbread man soap and other handmade brilliant bath and body. Only from Bubble Genius.
Bubbles guaranteed. Talking not included. Actual soap will not run away.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go.
Pants.
Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Hey, by the way, enter your promo code Bob and Chez, B-O-B-A-N-D-C-H-E-Z, and get 15% off your entire order from Bubble Genius. Buy their crap or you're an idiot.
Oh, boy.
And also make sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes because it's free and you automatically get the downloads of each of the shows when they become available. So there you go. Big after party coming up tomorrow, Friday, the whatever that be, the 16th of November. Yeah, yeah. That's the
hey. Did you see the Ron Paul farewell speech?
Yes, I did. I did.
It was a beautiful thing.
It's just I wanted to play like some sort of graduation theme behind
48
it.
Minutes of a ranting leprechaun.
That's right. And he was driving his whimsical jalopy.
That's what. Yeah, he disappeared in a cloud of smoke and vanished into the ether. I thought I'd tell you this because I know you'll appreciate it. The excerpt from it that Salon put up.
Yeah.
In just those excerpts, the word liberty or a variation thereof was used 9 times. freedom 6 times, including 5 times basically in one very short paragraph.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
9 times he said liberty.
I wonder if this whole secession movement, which obviously we're going to talk about, I wonder if the whole secession movement are actually Ron Paul people. Because that's you want to talk about overlap? The Ron Paul libertarian people. Those are the people who want the smaller government. They want the Confederacy style government.
Yeah, they want a feudal era.
Yeah, they really, really do. And so, and then they also, I think it was, didn't Ron Paul say something about secession being completely legal in his farewell speech? He went off on secession too, talking about how,
I wouldn't be surprised. I genuinely wouldn't.
Yeah, I think that's the clip that I saw where he was talking about secession being constitutional and you know, oh, well, the United States has made it. You know, the United States, we had a revolution and, you know, we just did it. And that's my Ron Paul impression.
That's actually a very good impression.
he's got that sad, plaintive voice. He's like, well, they just, you know, they went off and we had a revolution. We had a Declaration of Independence and we formed our own country and we seceded from England, you know. And so, and because that happened, because lightning was captured in a bottle and the United States was formed with the right people at the right time in history, then it could just be done willy-nilly over and over again. Why don't we just do it? Yeah, put Ron Paul in charge.
Ron Paul has been elected president of the planet of a billion little Ron Pauls.
Well, that's one of the many, 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 many consequences of this fantasy land, this whimsical jalopy that is secession. Is that once you secede and you make that your precedent for formation, like this is how we were formed, and so therefore it's legal, and so what's the next piece? Well, if you don't like the way this seceded government is working, you can just break off from it. You can secede from that government. And then if you don't like how that subsequent government's working, secede again. Until it keeps subdividing and subdividing and subdividing until it just disintegrates. It just, all that's left is water vapor. A small green globule on the drum seat.
Well, my piece for banter, the open letter to Texas yesterday was...
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting. I was reading that, and of course you wrote about Secession Today, and it's funny to look at it and think about the differences in sort of style of you and me.
Yeah.
I'm just angry and pissy, and I've got, like, you know, lots of screw yous and just, you know, and just the usual bitchy person that I am. Mm-hmm. And you, like, spell things out very calmly and rationally and put it all out there and back it up with facts and all that. Actually, that's not really true. That was, oddly enough, the Texas piece, which was, of course, kind of a joke, actually did contain more, you know, more statistics than I normally put out there. I mean, and they're very real ones. So
yeah, it was a great piece. Yeah,
it's like Texas sucks. Texas is really, you know, it's really kind of a crap hole when you compare it to the rest of the country to begin with.
Yeah.
So you want to secede? You really want to do that? Okay, fine. Go right ahead. You will drown in your own incompetence, ineptitude, and complete inability to run a successful state as a country in a matter of months.
Yeah. These are people who are like on the far right. They're the equivalent of someone like Matt Stoller, who they have this crazy idea.
It's nihilistic.
And yeah, and they have no idea what's going to happen or how they're actually going to do it. They're just signing their names willy-nilly to a White House petition that will actually only get their question answered. It just has no legal binding whatsoever. And then what? We got a break. And after the break, we're going to really talk about secession. Back after this.
Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Diamond David Lee Roth, right here. Tattoos. I see all these guys walking around with tattoos, and I say, "Wait, where did this come from?" All of a sudden.
You know what Dave is doing now? He's a waiter at Guy Fieri's restaurant. It's the perfect job for him. Because that really, Fieri really is like a David Lee Roth type character.
Yes, he is. Yep, that's exactly right.
He's a combination of David Lee Roth and post-Van Halen Sammy Hagar.
Uh-huh. Right. Post-Van Halen Sammy Hagar is just as insufferable as David Lee Roth.
Yeah.
And Guy Fieri. So that's a great analogy. Oh, God. So back to secession. They don't know what's on the other side of that process. And the process is a one in a million shot. It just will simply, where would they get the support? First of all, you need to find enough Southern lawmakers, powerful, moneyed lawmakers. Like, I'm talking about senators, governors, leaders of the state legislatures. They would have to get together, all of them, form some sort of secession convention, and then all agree to an ordinance of secession.
Right.
And then vote on that, possibly in the state legislature, possibly amongst this convention, and then actually secede and say, "We've seceded." Well, you know, I mean, any number of things could happen after that.
As you keep talking about this, and obviously the amount of effort that you put into writing the piece for Banter, as I was reading it and as I'm listening to you now, I can't help but think, dear God, why are we, not just you, but why are we talking about this? It really is. It's not going to happen. The people who actually think this is a good idea, they're nut jobs. You're never going to convince them. Literally everyone else knows this is a joke.
Well, this all connects with libertarianism. It connects with far-right radicalism.
You're right about that, yeah.
It also connects with this whole notion of opposition, of being so utterly patriotic, except when there's, you know, the black liberal Democrat in the White House. Then everything is off. You know,
no, that's like, that's a good point. And it also says a lot about the thing that, that, you know, God knows that we, you and I both constantly bring up, you know, the underpants gnome syndrome, which is everybody wants something and they make these big grand gestures about how important, you know, especially, you know, politically, everybody makes these big sweeping statements about what they want with no real plan to do it.
Yeah.
You know, just, well, you know, liberty. A vote for Ron Paul is a vote for liberty. Or secession, that's liberty. No, it's not, you jackass. You know, how? What are you going to do between saying it and actually getting it?
Yeah, and that part of that was kind of part of my point in my column was to make it seem so far-fetched and so absurd and the consequences so unimaginable as to completely discount it and discount anyone who might even think that it was a possibility. I mean, there are lots and lots of people. I mean, if you look at the comments on the Huffington Post, you look at Facebook, there are people who think it's a fantastic idea and they're absolutely serious about it. I mean, Ron Paul was saying, well, I think we can do it. We did it in 1776, you know, and so you have a major leader of a large faction of the Republican Party who thought it was a great idea. So you got to – I mean, it's all part of painting a picture of the sorts of things that the far right is saying. It's just – it's simply just not an option. You know, we had this a little bit during the Clinton years. I think there was the rise of the militia movements, the Michigan militia, and the, you know – 4 years ago, all the libertarians, well, not just the libertarians, Republicans in general, talking about going galt, you know, just ceasing to contribute to the economy.
Ceasing to produce, because that's what we know about white trash. They're producers.
So my conclusion was...
I'm going to cease producing those rusted car parts that exist in my front yard.
Yeah. Or either that, just go off into the forest and live in a cave off the grid, make yourself a hut or something, and have your pouty, whiny bitch session, fling feces at the electoral map, and then come back when you're ready to play ball like, you know, a grown-up.
Yeah, when your pity party's over, let us know.
Yeah. Because the alternative is latching your wagon to this ridiculous notion of secession. And the more it gets talked about, and this is another concern that I have, the more it gets discussed as on the, I'm talking about on the right, as a viable option, the more, and we've seen this with so many different ideas on the right, where suddenly things become legitimized. I mean, the notion of turning a Benghazi into a Watergate-style scandal went from fringy and weird and politically advantageous for the Romney campaign to being a legitimate thing, where we're talking about, you know, serious investigations and obviously the slight chance of impeachment or some sort of investigation leading to that. They would like nothing more than that.
They would.
Yeah. I mean, can you ever imagine 2 years ago thinking that we'd be spending an entire campaign season, presidential campaign season, you know, defending the notion of rape as being an awful, awful thing without exception. You know, these ideas, they become legitimized so easily on the right. And you know what? It's fun to pound them down. it's fun to bludgeon them. So it's good. It's all good. But I mean, the whole sequence of events of a secession would lead to basically third world status for whoever decided to do it.
Of course, it would.
They'd be cut off from the rest of the world. I kind of hypothesized in that article I wrote that maybe China would still do business because China, you know, China does business with rogue nations. They might continue to, you know, send stuff to Walmart in this new confederacy or whatever they call it. But you know, it would be cut off from everything else. There'd be no internet access. There'd be no shipping. There'd be no commerce. There'd be no trade.
It would be idiocracy in a matter of weeks.
It really, really would. I mean,
we're already moving toward that as a country, but yeah, it would be, that's what it would be like.
Yeah. It would end up reducing itself into some sort of weird barter system. But I mean, mm-hmm. I think they would ultimately relent before that would even occur. I think they would give up. You know, because first of all, so many people would just exit the country, exit their new, you know, whatever it is, state or confederacy or whatever you want to call it. There'd be a massive refugee situation, people just streaming over the border.
Dude, my 4-year-old daughter lives in Dallas. I would have to pull like a reverse Ross Perot and hire, you know, Navy SEALs to go in and get her, like in War Eagles Dare.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we'd have to do like airdrops, like the Berlin airlift, in order to get supplies to places like Austin and wherever there's blue. Like we would target all these B-52s with, you know, just go to the blue areas and just drop food on them. Because they're kind of trapped right now. But yeah, it is a ridiculous notion, and it's never going to happen. It's never going to happen. So have you been following the David Petraeus business?
You know what? I've read a couple of stories here and there. David Simon's incredible piece in it ran on his blog, but it they also ran it over at Salon. I think that was the best thing that I've read written about it so far. And you know, honestly, it's interesting because I mean, Simon's the creator of The Wire, and he's a great writer to begin with, but he used to be a journalist, and his whole thing about how when did journalism becomes so enraptured by the idea, you know, so tittering about the idea of sex and people's sexual escapades and the fact that people cheat on their husbands or wives or whatever. I mean, his sort of takedown of the way journalism has approached this and the horrible way journalism has approached this, I think that's the best thing I've seen written. But aside from all the sort of ins and outs of it, if you'll pardon the pun, all the little, you know, who's sleeping with who and who's this new person, honestly, no, I haven't. I've seen some pictures. But I haven't been following any of it because I, quite frankly, do not care. I don't care one bit.
Yeah, and neither do I. The aspect that I care about at this point is obviously there are two separate things. If there was national security breaches and secrets being passed around via Gmail or whatever it was, it's probably bad. The other thing is. It's entertaining to watch the Republicans and the conservative entertainment complex be completely flummoxed by this.
Right, to not know what to do with it because they're looking for a way to blame it on Obama.
Yeah.
And they kind of can't because they love Petraeus.
Right, they love Petraeus. They love the troops. You know, everything is – they spent the last 12 years talking about how, well, we always got to listen to the troops. We got to listen to the commanders.
Right. Well, it's funny because they've had no trouble blaming the women in it.
Yeah.
The women are all these sort of, you know, seductresses.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and so they don't know quite how to approach this. They're just completely twisted around. You know, Drudge, it's actually making for, Drudge has been so twisted around that he's actually just presenting the information without any sort of spin.
Right. I mean, see, that's the interesting thing is that you're so used to seeing them blame everything on Obama and look for a way to spin it politically that it's odd and kind of disconcerting when they're just, you know, when they've somehow decided, look, there's nothing we can do with this politically and they just tell the truth.
What they were really trying to do is get it attached to Benghazi. And that's one thing that Drudge did do initially is he, you know, oh, yeah, look at this. Petraeus is resigning and he was scheduled to testify about Benghazi.
Right. Well, he's conspiracy theory.
Yeah, he's still going to testify. He's still going to testify. So whether he's resigned or not, it doesn't matter. So and in the interim, nothing has come out about Benghazi whatsoever. So this has. I don't know what did they think he was doing? Do you think Petraeus and Broadwell were, you know, doing a doggy style in the CIA consulate in Benghazi when they should have been rescuing the people out of the embassy or something?
Sure.
No, there's nothing like that.
Gambling.
They would have – Drudge would have loved that. Right on top, maybe they were having sex on top of the unemployment numbers from October and the president's real birth certificate.
Actually, the best inadvertent Petraeus thing of the week, it's just a truly a surprising little twist that nobody, I'm sure that the makers of the game never saw coming, but in the game Black Ops, Black Ops 2, the new Call of Duty game that came out this week and has probably already sold a bazillion copies. David Petraeus is the Secretary of Defense in the story.
Yeah, I saw that.
He's the Secretary of Defense, and there's an aircraft carrier called the USS Barack Obama because it takes place in 2025.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, it's a great game, actually. Very, very good game. But,
that's cool.
Yeah, and so the idea is that in the future, Petraeus is Secretary of Defense, and there's the USS Barack Obama.
Yeah, that'll never happen. Petraeus's career is over.
Yeah, I know.
I'm sorry.
Which is a shame because, you know, he's, by all accounts, a good, smart man.
Yeah.
And, wow, all right, he screwed up and had – not even – there are people who don't think that that's screwing up. I do because I've had it done to me and I've done it to people. And, you know, I think it's humiliating and it's hurtful, but – it has nothing to do with how you do your job. You know, I mean, he did it. The response to it, his response to it has been correct across the board. He didn't lie. He didn't make up stories. He didn't, you know, engage in a massive cover up. He just came right out and said, look, yeah, this happened and that's it. And, you know, quit to go try to figure things out with his family, I'd imagine.
Well, it turned out, I mean, speaking of smart man, this is the latest news about the usage of email. And I was unaware that people did this, but it's actually kind of clever. CBS News has learned that during their affair, Petraeus and his alleged former mistress, Paula Broadwell, used a cyber trick known to teenagers and terrorists.
Love it. Teenagers and terrorists.
They're about the same.
Actually one and the same. They really are.
They're exchanging ideas in an effort to hide their communications. Sources say they often composed draft emails, which they could both read on a shared private email account without actually transmitting the messages. It's not so smart, because, and even for the teenagers and the terrorists, because it's still, if it's an online shared account, that means it's online already. There is information being transferred through the internet, because in order to view those draft emails on your computer, that information has to be sent through the intertubes from whatever server it's on at Gmail or Hotmail or Yahoo or whatever. Yeah. And by the way, ask me how secure those emails are after having been hacked through my email account.
I get it. It is clever, though. Sometimes infidelity is just that.
Yeah.
It's a couple of people involved in an affair, and that's really the end of the story. And I would say that if it was a Republican administration, I absolutely wouldn't care less. The only thing obviously that makes Republican sex scandals so often noteworthy to me is the fact that the people behind them are hypocrites.
That's right.
They generally preach, you know, family values, and, you know, we, as Bill Maher says, we screw our wives and our wives only. And, you know, and that's what makes it newsworthy. Other than that, I don't care. I just don't care.
That's right. That's right. Well, you know, we'll see how it plays out. But, I mean, mainly from the perspective of how the Republicans are ultimately going to pay attention to it. Because I don't think, you know, again, they just don't know how to cover it. They just don't know how to talk about it. So that's fine.
That's fine.
And then, you know, again, like if they did transfer national security secrets illegally through Gmail or whatever it was, then that's bad. That's bad news, and they ought to be held accountable for it. And more than just the court of public opinion. So we'll see what happens there. But I don't count on us spending a whole lot of time on this unless something occurs that's really, really squarely in our wheelhouse here. But coming up on the after party, we're going to get into some more politics as we've been wont to do lately. Congressman Desjarlais is back in the news. We're going to be talking about him on the after party. Let's see what else. We're going to be talking about, oh my God, the Lee Atwater tape. We'll be playing the Lee Atwater tape on the after party too. So we'll be talking about those couple of things by way of politics. There's surely some more stuff about Guy Fieri. We're going to be talking about the New York Times review of his awful restaurant. We're going to be talking about Papa John's and this ridiculousness about Obamacare and all the prohibitive taxes that make it impossible to run a restaurant. Boo!
You did it again, by the way.
I did it. I'm just losing. It's the last show before Thanksgiving break, and I'm just letting loose. I'm letting my hair down.
Good.
Swearing like a sailor. Donuts in the news, a new donut recipe that I want to reveal. It's something I think both of us would be running out to buy them if they sold them near our homes.
Hmm.
Oh, and BP is in the news again. So all this stuff we're going to be talking about on the oh, and a tape of Bono doing a Bill Clinton voice. That'll be coming up on the after party Friday at noon. Subscribe, $6 a month. Cancel anytime. See you then. Bye.